Welcome to Holden Village. Today in the fireside room are Rosie and Jonathan Betzal, and the topic of their theme today is stories and songs for all ages. So let's listen to Rosie and Jonathan.
Well, good evening. My name is Jonathan Betzal. Ding, ding. I'm from Seattle. And my work is as a children's librarian for the Snow Owl Regional Library System, which covers two of the counties north of Seattle. I've been a children's librarian since the fall of 1979. And I've...
Yeah, John, you should put that close to you.
Okay, let's start all over again. I'm Jonathan Betzal. I'm from Seattle. I work as a children's librarian for the Snow Owl Regional Library System, is to the north of Seattle, and I can tell you some stories about getting to work, but I mostly when I tell stories in library programs, I am telling traditional tales of various kinds, and that's mostly what I want to share tonight. My favorite group to tell stories for is preschoolers, kids by which the librarians usually mean children between the ages of 3 and 5 years old. Because short folk tales often work really, really well with them. They like to really join in the story times. I do often tell stories for older groups and even for adults. I'm a member of what's called the Seattle Storytellers Guild, which is where we get together once or twice a month often and swap stories and coach each other a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then the guild often sponsors educational programs where people can learn how to tell stories better. So what I'd like to do tonight, I was going to wait and see, you know, what kind of people showed up before deciding which stories to tell. So we do have a mostly older crowd here. I see one somewhat younger person. So I'll tell you some of my longer stories. If we had younger children here, I would start with my preschool routine. I do a little hand game like this that really kind of brings them into the group, kind of gets everybody working together a little bit. If you'd like to try it, we can do it. Everybody willing to do that? Okay, you make your hands like this, like little mouths that can open and shut, and open and shut. And we sing a little song. Now, the way I always teach the song, they open and close together, not alternating. The way I always teach this song is I sing each line twice. The first time, you just listen to me, and you can do the motions if you want. It'll help you remember. But the second time, we all sing it together. So when we've done each line twice that way, then we sing the whole thing all together. And if it takes more than once after that, then we do it more than once. But usually everybody gets it. So let's give it a try. Here it goes. Open them, shut them, open them, shut them, give a little clap. Okay, now try that with me. Open them, shut them, open them, shut them, give a little clap. Very good. Now the second part's almost the same. Open them, shut them, open them, shut them, put them in your lap. Okay, let's try that part. Open them, shut them, open them, shut them, put them in your lap. Good, here's a third part. Creep them, slowly creep them, right up to your chin. Try that with me. Creep them, slowly creep them, right up to your chin. Good. Open up your little mouth, but do not let them in. Okay, let's try it all together. Open up your little mouth, but do not let them in. Okay, now you've been through the whole thing, let's do it all together. Open them, shut them, open them, shut them, give a little clap. Open them, shut them, open them, shut them, put them in your lap. Creep them, slowly creep them, right up to your chin. Open up your little mouth, but do not let them in. Very good. See how easy that was? And after you've done that a few times, everybody in the group is kind of used to being there in a group. Now, some storytellers, they'll like light a story candle, or they'll maybe play some music to kind of get everybody into the mood. But I like doing these kind of participatory activities because they work for me. And, you know, whatever works for you as a storyteller is good. Now, okay, well, we have a couple young people here. Let's try this story out. This story is called Millions of Cats, and this is one of the first picture books, the first modern picture books. It dates from about 1936 or 1940. And the neat thing about this story is it has a repeating part. And I would like you to repeat that part with me. I'm not going to tell you what it is right now, but I will tell you as soon as we come to it, which is real soon. This incident was written by Wanda Gog, who I think is either Czech or Polish. It starts like this. Once, there lived a very old man and a very old woman who lived in a nice clean house which had flowers all around it, except where the door was. But they couldn't be happy because they were so very lonely. If we only had a cat, sighed the very old woman. A cat? Asked the very old man. Yes, a sweet little fluffy cat, said the very old woman. Well, I will get you a cat, my dear, said the very old man, and he set out over the hills to find her one. He walked over the sunny hills. He walked through the cool valleys. He walked for a long, long time until he came to a hill that was completely covered with cats. Cats here, cats there, cats and kittens everywhere. Now listen closely, because this is the repeating part. Hundreds of cats, thousands of cats, millions and billions and trillions of cats. Want to try that with me? Hundreds of cats, thousands of cats, millions and billions and trillions of cats. And now, of course, you're seeing all those cats in your mind's eye, right? Oh, cried the old man joyfully. Now I can choose the prettiest cat and take it home with me. So he chose one. It was white. But then as he was turning around to leave, he saw another cat, all black and white, and it seemed just as pretty as the first one. So he took that one too. And then right over there, he saw a black kitten with long, silky fur. I simply must have that one, said the very old man. And so he chose that one too. And then he saw one that had brown and yellow stripes, just like a baby tiger. It would be a shame to leave that one behind, said the very old man. And so it happened that every time that very old man turned around, he saw another cat that he thought was just too beautiful to leave behind, and before he knew it, he had chosen them all. So he went back over the sunny hills to show all his pretty kittens to the very old woman. It was very funny to see that very old man walking along with all those hundreds of thousands of millions of billions of trillions of cats following him. Well, they came to a pond.
Mew! Mew! We are thirsty!
Cried that. Now say it with me. Hundreds of cats, thousands of cats, millions and billions and trillions of cats. Well, there's a lot of grass. Sorry, there's a great big pond here. So each cat went down to the pond and took one little sip of water. And soon, the pond was gone.
Mew! Mew! Now we are hungry!
Cried the hundreds of cats. Thousands of cats, millions and billions and trillions of cats. There's a lot of grass here on the hillside, said the very old man. So each cat took one little mouthful of grass. Not a blade was left. Well, pretty soon that very old woman saw them coming. And she called out, "My dear, what are you doing? I asked for one little cat, and what do I see? Cats here, cats there. Cats and kittens everywhere now. Hundreds of cats, thousands of cats, millions and billions and trillions of cats." Good. "But we can never feed them all," said the very old woman. "They would eat us out of house and home." "I never thought of that," said the very old man. "What shall we do?" The very old woman thought for a while, and then she said, "I know. We'll let the cats decide which one we should keep." "Good idea," said the very old man. So he went and called out to the cats. "Which one of you is the prettiest?"
"I am! I am! No, I am! No, I am! I am! I am!"
cried hundreds of thousands of millions of billions of trillions of voices, for each cat thought that it was the prettiest. They began to quarrel. They bit and scratched and clawed each other and made such a great noise that the very old man and the very old woman ran back inside the house and slammed the door. They did not like such quarreling. But after a while, the noise stopped, and they looked outside to see what had happened. They could not see a single cat. "I think they must have eaten each other all up," said the very old woman. "It's too bad." "But look," said the very old man, and he pointed to a clump of high grass. In it sat one little frightened kid. They went out and picked it up. It was thin and scraggly. Poor little kitty, said the very old woman. Dear little kitty, said the very old man. How does it happen that you are not eaten up with all those hundreds and thousands and millions and billions and trillions of cats? Oh, I'm just a very homely little cat, said the kitten. So when you asked who was the prettiest, I didn't say anything. So nobody bothered about me. Well, they took the kitten into the house, where they gave it a warm bath and brushed its fur until it was soft and shiny. Every day they gave it plenty of milk, and soon it grew nice and plump. And it is a very pretty cat after all, said the very old woman. It's the most beautiful cat in the whole world, said the very old man. I ought to know, for I've seen, last time out, hundreds of cats, thousands of cats, millions and billions and trillions of cats, and not one was as pretty as this one. And that's the story. Okay, now, this instrument here, it's called a harp. Teachers like this, and a lot of people used to learn how to play these things in teachers' college because it's easier to play than a guitar. And that, in fact, is why I picked it up, because I wanted to be able to play along with my then girlfriend, now wife, and I didn't want to take time and trouble to learn how to play the guitar, which I now wish I had done. So this thing is not as flexible as a guitar. I can't play in as many keys, but it can do a lot of things, and I still like to use it very much. So, should we do The Cat Came Back? Do you guys know that song? You don't know it?
Yeah.
Okay, kind of. Make sure I have the right key. Okay. Old Mr. Johnson had troubles of his own. He had a yellow cat that wouldn't leave its home. He tried everything he knew to drive that cat away. But the cat came back the very next day. The cat came back. They thought he was a goner, but the cat came back. He just wouldn't stay away. Is that too low for people? You're right. He gave it to a fisherman with a dollar note. He told him for to take it up the river on a boat. The cat came back the very next day. The cat came back. They thought he was a goner, but the cat came back. He just wouldn't stay away. They gave that cat to a... They put that cat on a train going way out west. They told him for to get off with the one he loved the best. The train had hit a broken rail, then it jumped the rail. Not a soul aboard, the train was left to tell the tale. But the cat came back the very next day. The cat came back. They thought he was a goner, but the cat came back. He just wouldn't stay away. The cat, she had some kittens, a family of her own. Seven little kittens, when along came a cyclone. Tore the houses all apart and tossed the cat around. The air was kittens, and not one was ever found. But the cat came back the very next day. The cat came back. They thought he was a goner, but the cat came back. He just wouldn't stay away. Anyway, that song goes on for many more verses, but that's enough of that for now. Okay. Yeah. Well, what other kinds of stories would you guys like to hear about? Do you like those folktale type things where you have like repeating parts? Mm-hmm. Like that? Okay. I know. This is one that was actually made up, and this is a good example of story creation. I'm going to be doing a workshop next week, a Thursday morning, about, among other things, how to create your own stories from little scraps of folklore. And this is one that was done with that way. This friend of mine, Margie McDonald, who's the children's librarian in Bothell, has a PhD in folklore from Indiana University. She's from Indiana herself, and she got, when she was talking with one of her elderly relatives there, heard about this this guy who was out, this relative of hers who was out on the stream and listening to the frogs, and it sounded like they were saying things to him. So she took that little fragment of folklore and she turned it into this story. This is called Parley Garfield and the Frogs. Okay, and this will have a part, and when your part comes, well, let me just tell you what it is. Okay, each time the frogs are going to say their normal cry, and it'll sound like words, okay? So little teeny-weeny frogs near the bank. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me just do it as part of the story. Let's do it that way. So Parley Garfield was a young man. In fact, he was my grandfather, but he never would have become my grandfather if it hadn't been for the frogs. This is what happened. He was a teenager, and he was courting the girl who lived across the creek. This is the girl who later became my grandmother. Now, the creek was easy to get across in the winter when the water flow was real low and the, you know, ice would form and you could easily walk across it. And in the summertime, the water flow would be very low and it would be easy to wade across. But in the spring and in the fall, that glacier water would come rushing on down there, and that stream was very dangerous to cross. You could easily get swept off your feet and drown just like that. Well, but Parley Garfield had a system for getting across that creek, and this is how he did it. He'd go up to the stream bank in the spring or in the fall, and he'd call out like this, "How deep is it? How deep is it?" You want to try that with me? How deep is it? How deep is it? Good. And he'd sing that four times, and the frogs would answer him. The little frogs living right by the bank, they would call back and they'd say, "Ankle deep, ankle deep," just like that. You want to try it with me? "Ankle deep, ankle deep," four times. "Ankle deep, ankle deep." Good. So Parley would say, "I don't mind getting my feet wet to go see Grandma." So he'd take off his socks and shoes and roll up his pant legs a little bit and wade on out until his ankles were underwater. And then he'd call it again. "How deep is it? How deep is it? How deep is it? How deep is it?" And this time the bigger frogs who live a little further out, they'd call back and they'd say, "Knee deep," like that. So we'll try that four times. "Knee deep, knee deep, knee deep, knee deep." Good. And he'd say, "I don't mind getting my knees wet to go see Grandma." So he'd roll up his pant legs all the way up above his knees and wade it out till his knees were underwater. And he'd call out again. "How deep is it? How deep is it? How deep is it? How deep is it?" And this time the big frogs who lived kind of out towards, way towards the middle of the stream would call back and they'd say, "Belly deep," like that, okay? "Belly deep, belly deep, belly deep, belly deep. Oh, I don't mind getting that wet to go see Grandma," he'd say. So he'd wade on out till his belly was underwater and he'd call out again. "How deep is it? How deep is it? How deep is it? How deep is it?" This time, the great big grandpa frog who lived right in the very middle of the stream would call back and he'd say, "You better go round." Try that four times. "You better go round. You better go round. You better go round. You better go round." And Parley would know that that stream was just too deep and too dangerous for him to cross that day, so he'd wade back to the bank again, roll down his pant legs, put on his shoes and socks, walk half a mile up the creek to the covered bridge, cross over, and half a mile up the other side. But those frogs saved his life many a time, and that's why I'm here today. Okay? Now, speaking of frogs and water and stuff, one of the things that I do at my library is help celebrate what we call Water Weeks. Actually, this is a nationwide program now, but it started out just in the coastal states. The agencies that try to preserve and protect our water do a lot of public education to try and get people to stop dumping stuff, you know, garbage and oil and all the terrible stuff that goes into our water. They do a big, massive educational effort. They used to call it Coast Weeks, and then they realized there was all this stuff coming down from the Midwest, too, and, you know, in the internal parts of our country also need water awareness. So now it's called Water Weeks. So for several years I've done water awareness programs for the children in my library, and people have really caught on. Edmonds has some of the cleanest beaches on Puget Sound now, partly. But there's also a program called the Beach Rangers, just like the Forest Rangers. That's a city agency in the city of Edmonds, and they actually go around and patrol the beaches. They actually have Smokey Bear hats and everything. But we always do joint programs. So these are I do these song sheets as part of my contribution to their educational programs, and then they come and help me out of mine. So these are some of the songs that we do. Now, this is a song from Puget Sound called the Geoduck Song. I wish Linda Ellen was here for this, because she likes to sing this song, too. And her daughters have a little hand game that they do, but I'm sorry, I don't know it. Now, what key do I do this thing in? I'll try it and see if it works. Come high. Oh, well. Okay. That's too high. You can hear the diggers say as they're headed for the bay. Too low. Sorry. You can hear the diggers say as they're headed for the bay. Oh, I gotta dig a duck. Gotta dig a duck a day. Cause I get a buck a duck if I dig a duck a day. So I gotta dig a duck. Gotta dig a duck a day. Now, I have to tell you what a duck is.
Yeah, what is it?
Okay, a gooey duck is a giant clam. A big clam. This clam is so big. Its shell is about this big. Its neck is about this long. Its neck is so long that it cannot fit inside its shell. As a result, the surviving gooey ducks are very fast. They're very hard to dig. Okay, so when these guys think about digging a duck for a dollar a day, you know, they're working real hard for their dollar. All right, and the second verse talks about the personal qualities that they need to go after these gooey ducks. But some people consider them a delicacy. I've only had them once, and they didn't taste that much different than a regular clam to me. But people do swear by them, and they're actually the mascot of the Evergreen State College, one of our more progressive state educational institutions here in Washington. So let's try that song again. Oh yes, and your part goes like this. Goes, dig a duck, dig a duck, dig a gooey duck. Dig a duck, dig a gooey duck. Dig a duck a day. Wanna try that? Dig a duck, dig a duck, dig a gooey duck. Dig a duck, dig a gooey duck. Dig a duck a day. God, do you have a question?
He's trying to get how big it is.
Oh, okay. How big it is? Yeah, it's pretty big. It's a big old clam. If you ever go to Pike Place Market in Seattle, they have them for sale there, so you can see how big they are. You can hear the diggers say as they're headed for the bay. Oh, I gotta dig a duck, gotta dig a duck a day. Cause I get a buck a duck if I dig a duck a day. So I gotta dig a duck, gotta dig a duck a day. Dig a duck, dig a duck, dig a gooey duck. Dig a duck, dig a gooey duck. Dig a duck a day again. Dig a duck, dig a duck, dig a gooey duck. Dig a duck, dig a gooey duck. Dig a duck a day. Well, it takes a lot of luck and a certain kind of pluck just to dig around the muck just to get a gooey duck. He hasn't got a friend and he hasn't got a back. He doesn't know Donald and he doesn't go back. Dig a duck, dig a duck, dig a gooey duck. Dig a duck, dig a gooey duck. Dig a duck a day. Dig a duck, dig a duck, dig a gooey duck. Dig a duck, dig a gooey duck. Dig a duck a day. Unfortunately, that's all the verses I know to that song. There may very well be others. Okay. Trying to alternate songs and stories here.
All right, we'll go.
Okay. Well, last week I had this big Renaissance festival here. And so I tried to bring a Renaissance story. And this was the closest I could come. This is the story of the Green Man. Now, actually, I haven't completely learned this story yet, so what you're getting is an adaptation of the story in this book. This is called The Green Man, written and illustrated by Gail E. Haley, and those of you who are real strong Christians, I hope you won't be offended by some of the pagan imagery in here, but that's what it is. This is a pre-Christian story. Claude was the son of a rich man. His father was the squire, which means that he was like the landlord for a whole village, and this is real common in Europe. Well, of course, being the son of a rich man, Claude was arrogant, vain, pompous, and what he did all day long was ride his horse around looking beautiful in his clothes. One day, he stopped in at the local inn and ordered a sumptuous meal. And as he sat there, while he was waiting for his food to be cooked, he looked out at the village, everybody going there around their usual hustle and bustle, and he snarled to the landlord, "Look at those foolish villagers putting food out for the Green Man when they can barely feed their own family." "They're grateful, Master Claude," said the landlord, "for the Green Man protects their animals. He looks after their children when they get lost in the woods. Without the Green Man, the crops wouldn't grow, and the seasons wouldn't turn in their path. Oh, that's rubbish, said Claude. No one believes in the Green Man anymore. Oh, be careful, Master Claude, said the landlord. Terrible things happen to those who mock the old beliefs. Well, Claude thought nothing more of it, and the next day, he went hunting. Now, Claude, being a rich man, hated to go around on foot, so he rode his horse everywhere. Well, you know how they hunted in the old days? They wouldn't just kind of try to track animals through the woods the way we do. Instead, they'd send their servants way out front to beat in the underbrush and drive the animals and the birds back toward whoever was doing the hunting. So Claude sent his servants out to beat the game back there toward him, but nothing was happening. And Claude grew impatient. Those incompetent beaters, they can't do anything right, he snarled to himself, and he grew so impatient that he turned his horse and started heading off into the forest. But Claude didn't know his way through the forest. And pretty soon, he was lost. It was a hot, sunny day, and his clothes felt heavy on his back. But he was very pleased to see the glitter of a pond right in front of him. So he hopped off his horse, stripped off his clothes, and dived right in. He was having such a wonderful time in the forest, out there in the pond, enjoying the greenery of the forest and the peace and quiet, that he didn't see a thin, bony hand reach out of the bushes and snatch his clothes. That's right. Well, he enjoyed himself in the pond for a long, long time, and when he was fully refreshed, but he was feeling pretty hungry, he climbed out, and his clothes were gone. All that was left on the bank was a coil of rope. Well, he picked up the rope and used it to tie some branches of leaves around his waist. And then he looked all around, and he saw there were strawberries growing right there at the bank of the pool. So he ate as many strawberries as he felt like he could eat. And then he went wandering off through the woods. He thought he could just make his way straight on home, but he was lost. He didn't know where he was. And pretty soon, night started to fall. As he looked around in the gathering darkness, suddenly he could see a cave, and he felt his way inside. He picked up a stick that he found right at the entrance and used it to kind of poke his way around inside, when all of a sudden, he saw something. It looked like it was a big, bearded shape, and it had sharp horns on it. He cried out, "Stay back, I'm armed!" Thing came no closer, and Claude climbed up on a little shelf that he found, pulled his legs up under him, held a stick in front of him, and sat there until, exhausted, he fell asleep. The morning sunlight streamed into the cave, and Claude woke up with a start. There in front of him was a little nanny goat, nodding her head and frisking about a little bit. Claude laughed with relief. This must have been what he saw at the back of the cave last night, this little nanny goat who would never harm a fly. Here's a picture of him. See that? Well, Claude looked around the cave, and he saw a lot of signs that somebody lived here. There were baskets of acorns and grain, and even a few nuts and berries lying all around. There were nicely made shelves. There was a rooster pecking in the dirt right next to a nest where a hen was sitting on some eggs. This is someone's home, thought Claude. Maybe I should feed the animals. So he took some of the grain that he found in the baskets and fed it to the chickens and the other animals that were there, and he picked some nice fresh grass for the goat as a special treat. And then he helped himself to some goat's milk and eggs. As he looked around the cave, he found lots of other tools that would be really useful if you were going to make a life for yourself in the woods like that. Well, Claude went out to look around, and he found a big tree. A hollow tree, what we would call it a snag. He looked up and he saw the glint of honey up there, and he said to himself, "I'm going to get some of that." So he covered himself with mud to keep the bee's stings off him, and he started climbing the tree. When he was almost all the way up to the honey, all of a sudden, bursting through the nearest hedge, came his father's men on horseback, blowing their horns and hallooing with name, "Claude! Claude! Where are you?" Claude said to himself, I can't let them see me like this, all covered with mud, without my clothes and my boots. I'd be totally disgraced. So he kept silent, staying up there in the tree, clinging to the bark where nobody could see him because of the mud. And pretty soon, the riders rode by without any sign of having seen him. He got his honey, climbed back down again, and said to himself, I'll go back to the cave and I'll borrow some clothes from the owner of the cave when he comes home. But the owner never showed up. But Claude found himself living in the cave, growing leaner and stronger every day. As the warm days went by, Claude forgot almost completely about wearing clothes. He almost forgot that he was the squire's son. He became milker of the goat, feeder of the hens, friend of all wild animals. The forest creatures were not afraid of him. He fed them, talked to them, and spent hours watching them hunt and play. As the berries, fruits, and nuts ripened, Claude became gatherer and preserver. When the grain was harvested in the farmer's fields, he went out there and picked up all the leftovers, and he brought them back to his cave for himself and his animals. Claude was enjoying his new life. Even the sun and moon seemed to smile on him. One morning, after a heavy rainstorm, Claude heard terrible distress calls coming from somewhere near the river. So when he got to the river, he found that the heavy rainstorm had flooded an area where a cow and her calf were finding shelter under a tree. The cow was, of course, was able to swim to the bank of safety, but the terrified calf was refusing to follow its mother. Well, Claude rushed forward, gathered up the calf in his arms, and carried it safely through the stream to the other side. The grateful cow licked his hand in gratitude, and then led the calf safely back to the farmer's barnyard. See, there he is carrying the calf across the stream.
Mm-hmm. Elaborated on the pants, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. As the day, now what, listen to this. As the days grew colder, Claude added more and more leaves to his costume. He added insulation by sticking in lichen and moss to make it even warmer. And he even insulated his cave by stripping the bark off of birch trees and pounding it and pounding it and pounding it until it turned into cloth. Then he was able to hang it up as a curtain. He used that same cloth, after several attempts, of course, to make himself some winter boots. He built a fireplace near the entrance using stones that he found in the stream. He carved himself out mortar and pestle so he could grind the acorn and the nuts and the grain that he'd found and make bread out of it. Okay. The smell of fresh bread filled the cave, and a family of hedgehogs moved in. The cave was now well stocked with food. He'd collected all kinds of wild parsnips and Jerusalem artichokes and all kinds of good food that grows wild in the forest. And you can see here he is in his cave with his baskets and his nets full of food, fully stocked for the winter. One day when Claude was out gathering more acorns, he found a fierce wild boar threatening two small children from the village. Don't be such a selfish swine, Claude scolded the bull, spoke firmly to the boar. There are plenty of acorns for everyone. Go away and let the children have their share. The boar snorted defiantly, but turned and trotted off into the forest. There, there, now don't cry. That old boar is gone, Claude said to comforted the children. The girl looked up through her tears at the tall, sunburned man. He seemed as ancient, green, and moss-covered as the oak that towered above them. Are you the green man? She asked in a whisper. Claude looked down in surprise. Warm sunshine caressed his hair. A gentle breeze rippled his leafy costume. His feet felt as if they were rooted in the earth. Yes, Claude answered her at last, I am the Green Man. We helped the children to gather up the acorns they'd spilled and filled their basket to the brim. Then he led them safely to the edge of the forest. When winter came, at night, Claude rambled through the village. He helped himself to some of the food put out by the villagers, but made sure to always leave some for hungry, prowling animals. At times he felt lonely as he wandered through the deserted streets, looking in at the villagers enjoying their cozy cottages. He was homesick for his own village and his own family. but he returned each night to the cave and his animals, because he was needed now in the woods. Winter passed and spring was on its way. The smell of budding leaves, warm earth, and growing things filled the air. The days went by, and when he knew that the strawberries would be ripening by the pond, Claude went there to pick them. A man was splashing in the water. A fine suit of clothes lay on the bank, and a fine horse was tethered nearby. Claude quietly took off his leaves and put on the clothes. In the saddlebag on the horse, he found a mirror and some shears, and he clipped his hair and beard. Then he mounted the horse and rode back, and soon found himself at his own village. His mother and father were amazed and delighted to see him. Everyone had thought that he'd been killed by robbers or maybe eaten by wild animals. "It was the green man who saved my life," was all Claude would say. But his year away had changed the arrogant young man. Now he was hospitable to travelers. He cared for his animals. And each night, Claude put out food and drink for the green man. And that's an adaptation of the Green Man. Thank you. As retold by Gail Haley. Okay. Now, I want to do another one of my water songs for you, if I may. Oh, you know what? We're running out of time here. So let's do another participation one, because you guys have been sitting listening very patiently. So, you all know the song, "If You're Happy and You Know It." Many people know that. You know, if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. Okay, well, some of the beach rangers and I told you about them before, kind of rewrote that song for use at the beach, and this is how we go. If you're a crab and you know it, click your claws, okay? Mm-hmm. Let's see. If you're a fish, swish your tail, okay? If you're a clam, squirt your breath, just go like that, okay? If you're a whale, spout a spout, and do a bigger spout, like that, okay? If you're a worm, like a sea worm, wriggle around, okay? And if you're an octopus, wave your arms. Good, okay. If you're a crab and you know it, click your claws, click, click. If you're a crab and you know it, click your claws, click, click. If you're a crab and you know it, and you really want to show it, if you're a crab and you know it, click your claws, click, click. If you're a fish and you know it, swish your tail, swish. If you're a fish and you know it, swish your tail, swish. If you're a fish and you know it, and you really want to show it, if you're a fish and you know it, swish your tail, swish. If you're a clam and you know it, squirt your breath. If you're a clam and you know it, squirt your breath. If you're a clam and you know it, and you really want to show it, if you're a clam and you know it, squirt your breath. If you're a whale and you know it, spout a spout. If you're a whale and you know it, spout a spout. If you're a whale and you know it, and you really want to show it, if you're a whale and you know it, spout a spout. If you're a worm and you know it, wriggle around. If you're a worm and you know it, wriggle around. If you're a worm and you know it, and you really want to show it, if you're a worm and you know it, wriggle around. If you're an octopus and you know it, wave your arms, all eight of them. If you're an octopus and you know it, wave your arms. If you're an octopus and you know it, and you really want to show it, you're an octopus and you know it, wave your arms. Very good, okay. And you can do that, you know, even if you don't live by the ocean, you can do that with other things too. Okay, good. Now, let's see. Okay, not really supposed to do with this when you're storytelling, but I want to show off this book. This is called Spinning Tales, Weaving Hope. And we have copies of this for sale in the bookstore now, because I'm highly recommending it. These are called Stories of Peace, Justice, and the Environment, and I'd just like to read you one or two of them. Let's see. Okay, this is called King Solomon and the Otter. It's a Hebrew folk tale as rewritten by Heather Forrest. It is said that King Solomon was so wise, he could speak and understand the language of all the animals. To set an example for people, he decreed there should be peace among the beasts. Peace among the beasts, peace among the beasts. King Solomon decreed peace among the beasts. Death, death, Death to the slayer! Death to the slayer! The otter cried. It's the fault of the weasel my children died. I came out of the water with their food. I brought them these little crabs. Oh, they loved little crabs. And found that weasel had trampled my children dead on the ground. He broke the vow of peace, agreed among the beasts. Peace is dead, and death instead reigns without cease. I want justice. When the animals heard what the weasel had done to the otter's children, their outcry was immediate. Bring the weasel to the king, cried the other animals. Oh, king, said the weasel, what the otter says is true, but my heart contains no malice when I do the things I do. I heard the woodpecker drum a call to arms. I never meant to do the otter any harm. The drums, they thrilled me to the core, and I trampled her children as I marched to war. Then bring the woodpecker before me, said the king. Oh, king, said the woodpecker, be not alarmed. I drummed the drums, but I meant no harm. I saw the scorpion sharpening her sting. It frightened me so that I let the drums ring. Then bring the scorpion before me, said the king. Into the throne room came Scorpion, holding her poison sting high above her head. And she said, king, I made no offense. I sharpened my sting in my own defense. I saw the turtle climbing into her armor. I did the same, but I meant not to harm her. Oh, king, said the turtle, my armor is strong. I climbed in for safety, but I meant no wrong. I saw the crab with angry claws. She was charging across the ocean floors. Into the room came Crab. With tears in her eyes and claws outstretched, she said, yes, I confess. Yes, I confess. It's true what she saw. With angry claws, I did charge to war. But I saw the otter dive into my home and eat my children. I'd left there alone. Well, said King Solomon, turning once again to Otter, Otter, you're the one who cries justice be done, when Otter, you're to blame. One who sows the seeds of death shall reap the same. Peace among the bees. One problem with this room is we don't have dancing space. This is a song that's really good for dancing. It's called The Salmon Circle. And this was written for the bioregional movement in about 1986. That's when I learned it. The bioregional movement are people who, their basic nature doesn't really concern this story, but the people who are involved in this generally try to live as close to nature as they can, or at least feel that they're trying to do this. And so they try to become aware of all the natural cycles of things. And this song tells the story of the life cycle of the Pacific salmon. Does anybody here not know the life cycle of the Pacific salmon? You don't know? Okay. The Pacific salmon is a very interesting fish because it lives most of its life out in the ocean. But when it wants to have babies, it comes into the fresh water and goes way far up the stream, sometimes way up into the mountains, to lay its eggs and have its babies. And then the fish itself dies. But the babies hatch from their eggs the following spring, and they come down. They sometimes take as long as 2 years to get all the way down the stream back to the ocean again. Then they go out in the ocean and live for several more years, generally about 4 years. Okay. There are several different kinds of salmon. Their life cycles range in length, but they average about 4 years or so. And so this song tells that story. It's my only rock song. Circle from the sea to the sea, the rivers of life endlessly. They always return to the place they began for a million years. Swam and swam and swam. They swam and swam and swam. That's the chorus. It'll happen several times. You're welcome to sing along. Let's try it again. Oh, the salmon circle from the sea to the sea, up the rivers of life. Endlessly, and they always return to the place they began for a million years. They swam and swam and swam. They swam and swam and swam. Round the rocks in the pool and the river below, they are turning and turning, oh so slow. And they've been there forever in that sacred dance, and round they go.
taste of the water, they return to the source, lay down their eggs, feel the life force, resting safe in the gravel, pass the winter through. These crayfish are dying, but in the spring, life renews.
Yeah, we've been going for quite a while here. I bet people are ready for a stretch. Should we stand up and take a stretch?
Yeah.
Straight up, like this. Okay, now, Bob. Okay.
Songs
with
these goofy
lyrics. Oh, you want a goofy song? I got a goofy song for you. Would you? Okay, have a seat. You may know this one already. I was going to do something else, but that's fine.
Out of my face. I was
okay. This is one I do a lot. I do a lot of school visiting. It's part of my job. Unfortunately, the economic development of the town where I work is happening in such a way that people with children are no longer able to afford houses anywhere near the library. So if the kids want to come to the library, they have to get their parents to bring them, or they have to ride the bus, which a lot of kids do. I was really surprised.
Yeah.
So I'm changing the emphasis of my work to do more school visiting. This is one of the songs that I use. Hope that's not too low. Okay. Many, many years ago, that's too low, sorry. Many, many years ago when I was 23, I was married to a widow who was pretty as could be. This widow had a grown-up daughter who had hair of red. My father fell in love with her, and soon the two were wed. This made my dad my son-in-law and changed my very life. My daughter was my mother, 'cause she was my father's wife. To complicate the matter, even though it brought me joy, I soon became the father of a bouncing baby boy. This little baby then became a brother-in-law to dad, and so became my uncle, though it made me very sad. For if he is my uncle, then that also makes him brother to the widow's lovely daughter, who of course is my stepmother. Father's wife then had a child which kept them on the run, and he became my grandchild because he was my daughter's son. My wife, she is my mother's mother, and it makes me blue, because although she is my wife, she's my grandmother too. Now if he is my grandmother, I am her grandchild, and every time I think of it, it nearly drives me wild. For now I have become the strangest case you ever saw. As husband to my grandmother, I am my own grandpa. I'm my own grandpa. I'm my own grandpa. It sounds funny, I know, but it really is so. I'm my own grandpa. I thought you'd like that. The kids love it too. They always want me to do it again, and I won't because I don't want them to figure it out. Like a magician,
or if
you know.
You're wrong, they'll figure it out.
That's right.
You can almost say anything and get away with it.
That's right.
As long as you end up with being your own grandpa.
That's right. That's right. Okay.
Because I can't follow it, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, you know how it is. Okay, one more wisdom tale from here. Of course, back in the book, I've got a good one here. That's too long. Ah, here's a good one. Another peace story. This is called Showdown at Pangea Creek by Michael R. Evans. And they spell Pangea, P-A-N-J-G-A-E-A.
Where is that at?
Pangea is the name. If you ever look at a map of the world and you see how Africa and South America kind of fit together, mm-hmm. that suggests to some scientists about 100 years ago now that maybe at one time there was a one single continent of land, which they call Pangea. And that was discredited for a long, long time. And then in the 1960s, when I was studying geology in the late 1960s, right then, they were actually coming up with evidence that that was true. that there was once a single continent called Pangaea, and that, you know, ever since then the continents have been kind of spreading around and moving around. It's called theory of continental drift. And if you want to go into it, I recommend you reread that, but it's very interesting stuff. Incidentally, as a children's librarian, I can tell you that some of the best and clearest explanations of scientific phenomena like that are in books for older elementary age children. Like what, 8 to 10 year olds. And if you come to visit me in my library or your local public library anywhere, you know, they can definitely show you some of them.
Pardon? Come to the children's library.
Yeah, right, exactly, that's right. Okay, now this is another poem, that's why I'm reading it, by Michael R. Evans. In the small prairie town of Pangaea Creek, life it was hard for the timid and meek. For there lived in this town two outlaws so mean, they could stare at chameleons and make them turn green. Now the outlaw named Hank said, "I own this town, and any fool who denies it, they'll find 6 feet down." But the outlaw named Frank, he said, "I'm in charge, and any fool who denies it had better be large." So they faced off on Main Street one dark, chilly night to prove to the death which outlaw was right. 200 townsfolk were lining the street to see which of the outlaws would die in defeat. Hank took a step forward, and Frank took one too. Then, smiling, Hank pulled a small knife from his shoe. Frank looked at the knife, and still quite unafraid, he pulled out a dagger with a 13-inch blade. Well, Hank moved in closer, and gritting his teeth, and he pulled a long sword from its black leather sheath. Frank smiled when he saw that and vowed to survive, and he drew from his holster a Colt 45. Well, the distance between them was getting small fast, and the townspeople braced for the opening blast. But Hank wasn't finished. He still had some tricks, and he pulled from his shirt 7 dynamite sticks. He ignited a fuse, and he said with a hiss, "Okay, Mr. Outlaw, let's see you top this." Well, Frank didn't falter. He had nothing to lose. He pulled out 8 more sticks, lit the short fuse. Nose to nose, they just stood there, explosive held high, and 200 townsfolk prayed not to die. There were tall people, short people, fat people too. They were men, they were women, they were me, they were you. They were neighbors and relatives, and everyone knew that their lifetimes would end when that night was through. All because of 2 outlaws, too stubborn and blind to put down their greed and leave bygones behind. But the fuses grew shorter, the end it was near, and neither old outlaw displayed any fear. They just stood there and scowled and stared eye to eye, and somewhere in town someone started to cry. Then, as 200 townsfolk prayed in the dark, Hank reached his hand up and snuffed out his spark. He threw all his dynamite down to the ground, and he shouted to everyone standing around. He said, "Let it be known, if just one soul survives, it was Frank who destroyed all you townspeople's lives." Well, Frank's face grew pale as he looked up and down at the parents and children who lived in that town. And the parents and children just trembled and stared. They were white-knuckled, weak-kneed, exhausted, and scared. Well, he snuffed his fuse too, and he threw down his sticks, and he said, "Listen up, all you prairie town hicks. If it's peace that you want, well, I've hardly begun." And he threw down his 45 caliber gun. Well, Hank stared in wonder. Then his sword hit the ground. To the townsfolk, that clang was a heavenly sound. Then the two threw down bullets and daggers and knives, and the townspeople cheered. They'd escaped with their lives. Well, the outlaws, they're gone now. They left not a trace, those 2 men who started Pangaea's peace race. And Pangaea Creek's thriving, and it's known all around that you leave your guns home when you visit that town. All because of 2 outlaws who met long ago, who both had the wisdom to simply say no.
Great, great.
So that's just a couple of examples of the kind of stories you find in here. Spinning Tales, Weaving Hope, stories of peace, justice, and the environment. This is put together by a group called Stories for a Changing World. Okay, woo, time for one final song here. And I'd like your help on this, Rose. This is The Peace Is by Fred Small.
Okay.
Let me just get my words out so I don't mess up the chords.
Singing help?
Yeah, please. I need you to concentrate on the words, because I'm going to have to concentrate on the chords. This,
okay.
This is written by a friend of ours who writes these very complex songs. But this has a singable chorus, which you you can pick up as we get to it. It's pretty simple.
Feel the cool breeze